Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The Consumer Electronics Show, the largest tech show in the world, kicks off this week, and we're excited about all the announcements, especially the ones for the things that actually exist. Apple officially announced the pre-order and launch dates of the Vision Pro Mixed Reality headset, and guest host tech-savvy Diva is contemplating getting one. The black tech talent gap is widening, and it could cost black households $350 billion by 2030. And post-George Floyd murder DEI initiatives at big tech companies had about a three-year run. We got all this and more for you in episode 112 of The Tech John. From Columbus, Ohio, I'm your host, Rob Dunwood.
And from Atlanta, Georgia, I'm Nika Montford.
And also from Atlanta, this is Terrence Gaines, a.k.a. Brother Tech, a.k.a. I also read 3,000 books by the age of 8 and ran a 4-0 for a 100-yard dash in my prime, so... I agree with Cat Williams on that.
Yeah, I was like, everybody runs a 4.0. We go definitely talk.
Did you see the video where he ran it and like, I think he was in the, University of Memphis, gym, and he ran it in the gym and had somebody time it?
No, I didn't see that.
No.
Yeah.
Sure what was the time?
Wasn't a 4 flat. It wasn't no 4.1, 4.2.
It was a 4-4.
Oh, that's pretty fast, man. Okay, all right.
That is pretty fast. But he's talking about 4.0 or something.
So I'm like, I see you, Catley.
That's pretty fast. But if he was running what he said he was running, he would have been running in the Olympics or something like that. He wasn't always doing comedy. He would have been running track in high school and then in college and then probably going to the Olympics running like that. Cause that means he's probably running sub 10 hundreds, which there's what 30 people on earth that can do that. So I'm just saying, but we will definitely get to that at the end of the show. I got to start off saying Happy New Year. Cause this is our first show of the year. And also Nika, thank you for joining the show. So y'all who are not watching us right now may not realize that that voice you hear in the middle of me and Terrence is not Stephanie. That is Nika Montford, a.k.a. Tech Savvy Diva. Stephanie is out in Vegas this week, hanging out at CES, picking up all the news. And there's a lot of it that is going on out there. So hopefully she will have a great report for us when she comes back next week. But Nika, thank you so much for on short notice filling in. For us. And
Thanks for having me. It's always good to be here with you guys.
It is absolutely a pleasure having you. And we're going to go ahead and get into some tech news in just a moment. But before we do, I do want to let everyone know that we are on Patreon. So if you like to support The Tech John, you can head over to patreon.com/The Tech John. We've got multiple tiers over there, any one of which gets you access to our live stream and our after party. So in addition to us being a podcast that you listen to, we also are a video show that you can watch. And to do that, you've got to become a patron. So once again, head over to patreon.com/thetechjohn. Three tiers over there. Anyone gets you access to our live stream and after party. And also two of those three get you access to an ad free stream. So you do not have to listen to ads in your RSS feed if you choose to do so. So once again, that is techjohn.com/patreon or patreon.com/thetechjohn. Either one works. So with that, as I said, y'all, Tech Life Steph is hanging out at CES.
Must be nice. Somebody to send for you, get you flued out. Probably one of the reasons why.
Out to the Vegas.
Probably one of the reasons why I've never been to CES, because when am I checking for your boy? And it falls around the holidays.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's kind of trying to manage all that stuff.
Yeah, she has.
Being off for the holidays and then turn around, right back around and be another couple of days in Vegas. I'm like, yeah, that's a lot.
I was planning on going. And then I don't want to say at the last minute, but probably about 3 weeks ago, decided, you know what? That's a heck of a check to go walk around and look at tech that I can't get yet. So, and
that ain't out.
That ain't out yet.
That ain't never coming out.
And much of it will be coming out, but it's like there's only so many TVs I can have in one house. Just in my office, I got a TV right there. I got a TV right there, and I got a TV on the wall right there. And then around the corner, there's another TV. I can only have so many. I can't get any more. So, but anyway, y'all, did either one of you see anything that kind of piqued your interest as far as what's going on at CES this week?
No, I'm still flabbergasted at how much those robo vacuums cost. Now we actually have two of them, but they're like the super cheap ones, like $100, $150, $200. And they kind of die pretty quickly. So sooner or later, we're going to invest in a nice one that maybe even does the vacuuming and does like the mopping for the hardwood floors, the hard surfaces. But them things cost $1,500, $1,700, $2,000. And it's like, I'm not doing that for no vacuum cleaner.
Well,
I got a vacuum in the house and three kids in the house. So it's like, well, we won't be doing that. But I see a lot of those coming out at CES, and they empty themselves and they do all these other things. It's like, yeah, I'm not paying $1,500 for no vacuum cleaner. I'm sorry.
Well, go ahead, Nick.
I was just going to say, I really haven't seen anything that really has made me say, yes, I have to have this immediately, or I want this. I've been kind of, to me, a little bit underwhelmed. Maybe as it officially gets started, maybe as some more stuff starts to come out, then maybe my interest will be piqued. But right now, nothing has really jumped out at me and said, you must have me.
Well, Terrence, you know, you have to keep in mind that $1,500 vacuum cleaner, it actually allows you, or at least one of the models this up in that range, allows you to do video conferencing. So, you know, being able to video conference from your vacuum cleaner that you aren't actually using, which happens to go away from you. I would imagine that if you're using a vacuum cleaner that's a robot, the goal is for you not to have to be around it. So I don't know how the video conferencing would work. But hey, they added it in there, and AI, because AI isn't everything now.
AI in a robot vacuum cleaner.
Yeah.
AI. But why would you want a camera in a robot vacuum cleaner for video conferencing?
I'm going to guess because they could put it in there and they could charge you more for it.
That seems like a waste of effort to me. Like, couldn't you come up with something better?
I'm trying
to put in the vacuum cleaner.
I'm trying to figure that out. It's like, at what point would I want to do video conferencing on my vacuum cleaner robot? But hey, some product manager said this was a good idea.
Well, my guess is
some product director said, yeah, I think you're right. And that now exists as a product you can purchase.
My guess is you don't have to stay stationary while you're on a call. If you work remote and you're on a call, you can walk to the kitchen and get dinner ready, and the little robot will follow you around so you can still stay on the call. I don't know if that's any difference than switching the conference call to my phone and taking my phone to the kitchen.
Right, but, because the whole goal of the vacuum cleaner is to clean up dirt and dust, right?
I guess. I guess so.
But would you have to pick it up? Because most of them are like little flat, like discs. Like,
I think maybe it has a stem on it.
Yeah, it has like a little screen. Like a whole little arm that swings up. And yeah, it is very 1984-ish Runaway. I don't know if y'all have ever seen that movie with Tom Selleck, to where it was like futuristic movie back in the 80s with robots and this and that and the other. That's what I was thinking of when I saw it. But yeah, a robot vacuum cleaner, that part I can get, Cause like they've been around long enough. Okay. That makes sense. It's going to go sweep up, get the dust, you know, and they actually do work fairly well at this point. I mean, I think when they first came out, they were a little gimmicky, but they've improved them over the, you know, however many years these things have been out. But yeah, I'm hard pressed to figure out the video conferencing aspect of it. I also saw a hall, or I guess they have a whole area for like drone stuff. So, I have not actually gotten a drone anytime recently. I have like a remote control helicopter that I got probably 10 years ago. It was just like one of those mall gifts, or not only even say gag, but it's like a kiosk set up in the mall,
and middle of the mall.
Yeah. It technically flies and does what it does, but I have not gotten into the higher end drones, but I am interested to see just what some of these drones are doing. Cause I actually saw a kid in my neighborhood that has a drone that he is always doing tricks and stuff like that on his skateboard in the middle of the street down the sidewalk. And now he has this drone where he literally takes a drone and just throws it up. And the drone literally just, you know, depending on what he set it for, just sits over his shoulder and records him. And it's like, yeah, that's kind of cool. So I would be interested just to see all the flying helicopters and drones and sky taxis and all that kind of stuff, because I would have to imagine that they have a massive amount of those type of things out there. But I think really the buzzword, the acronym is CES, is going to be AI. I would not be shocked if AI is actually used more than CES is at CES, because everything is going to have AI in it. We were talking about this a little bit in the green room before we started. AI is just going to become one of those catch-all words, like in the late 90s, early 2000s, internet. Everything just had internet. What does having internet actually mean? You know, you have internet, capability, but you know, now it is going to be everything, and they mama is going to have AI in it.
Yep, sounds about right.
And as far as the drones, I know one of my friend has a pretty nice one, and it has to be like FAA regulated. Like you have to sign up and register your drone, and depending on what you're using it for, you have to have different licenses. So if it's like real estate, it's like really, I thought it was just something fun and neat to have, but you have to have a lot of stuff to really, you know, use it and be in compliance, because if you're out of compliance, that's the federal government. So it's just like a lot. And I was like, it's a lot. I've seen people kind of use it a lot for like travel. Like you see like your travel influencers, and they have like these over the air shots of like their rooms, or, you know, them doing like, aquatic type things. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I didn't realize until she was telling me how, you know, the things she had to go through to get it. I was like, I did not realize that it was that serious.
Oh yeah. So the one she got cost more than a few dollars. Cause those ones are the ones that, they're generally over a certain weight, over a certain size, and that's what requires the FAA. I'm not there. If I was to get one, it'd be one of those little ones that folds up into the size of like a small portable speaker or something like that. Everything folds in up on it, and you can just go pick it up at Best Buy. You don't need to get a license and register it and all that kind of stuff.
I thought all of them had to have them, regardless of the size.
Here in Ohio, it's only over a certain size.
Oh.
So I guess if it's FAA registration, that's a federal thing, but
that's federal. So it should be for everybody, right?
But that's for everybody. So, but I do believe that some mini drones that are under a certain size don't require you to get a license. Now I could be making that up because I don't know. I don't have one, but that's
what
I thought.
You don't necessarily need a license, but you do need to get it registered. Cause I had a DJI drone. It wasn't thousands of dollars. I think it was like $700 or $800 at the time. And I didn't use it enough, so I sold it. But in order to be compliant, I had to register it with the FAA, and they had me a little card. And then every year you gotta renew it, things of that nature. Now, again, if you're doing photography or you're doing commercial stuff, definitely different stuff goes along with that. But your average, I'd say, $400 and up drone, you gotta register that with the
FAA. Wow, I did not know that. Mm-hmm. So another reason.
Yeah, that's why I was like, I didn't realize it was that serious. But now, when you think about it in the scope of things, it makes sense, because if you're able to fly overhead, go into, you know, people's yards, or if you're trying to look into, like, say, if you're trying to fly over a federal prison, for instance, like
and there's a lot
restricted areas.
Yep. a lot of them. Couldn't go near parks. When I had mine, I couldn't go near state parks. I couldn't go nowhere near airports. I couldn't go nowhere near any sort of private, facility, which really kind of limited it to where you could go. And I really wasn't using it all that much anyway. I was like, yeah, this is for the birds.
Yeah. You know, I remember there was a game, a football game, NFL game this past weekend. And, or it might have been 2 weekends ago, but they kept having these weird timeouts. And like the announcer's like, well, what's going on? It's like, you know, it shouldn't take this long for them to get this figured out. What's going on? And it turned out that somebody was flying a drone over the stadium. So they got to shut everything down from a game standpoint when that happened. So yeah, I guess, you know, when you think about what those drones can do, you know, the government wants to know who has them, you know, I guess. But, you know, it's not for me, but I would be interested. As I said, if I were at CES, one of the exhibits I would want to go see is just like the area where they have all the drones and the sky taxis and all that kind of stuff, because that stuff is just kind of cool to me. But there was some news, y'all, that came out today. It's been rumored for some time about the Apple Vision Pro. But we now have an actual date. It's coming out on February 2nd. And pre-order started 8 a.m. January 19th. So my question to the two hosts of Snobble Westcast, either one of y'all about to get one?
Get one. I think you buried the lead. Get one what?
Oh, Vision Pro. Vision Pro.
Yes. Nika is. I'm a wait and see on this one.
I'm very, like I said, when it first came out, I am very much leaning towards yes as a purchase. So we'll see what happens when we get to the 19th.
I don't know. But when it first came out, you was like, yeah, I'm definitely getting one now. It's
yeah, I was definitely
towards getting one. What changed?
So I'm doing a lot of travel in March. So I'm like trying to gauge whether I should be one of the first ones to get it or wait until I come back after my travel. So that's kind of my only hesitation, because at the time when they first announced them, you know, I really didn't have anything on the docket except for, you know, my birthday trip. But now I have like 2 international trips, you know, within, you know, a few days of each other, the very end of February, the very beginning of March. So, now I'm like, we'll see, but it's still not off the table. It's still not off the table. So
I kind of wish they would have waited a little bit longer to announce the Vision Pro, because now all the kind of the shininess is gone because we've known about it. We've seen about it. You know, these tech websites, these, you know, platforms have not stopped talking about it, to where now Apple really didn't even have to come up with a little mini presentation to announce that it'll be available on February 2nd. They just put out a press release and then All the tech journalists picked up on it, you know, which leads me to believe it's like it's going to be available starting February 2nd. But I wonder what kind of marketing blitz Apple is going to do, if any, to re-ramp up excitement for this thing, because we've known about it for, you know, over 6, 7, 8 months. So it's like, I wonder if people are just going to keep that enthusiasm, or is Apple going to have to re-ramp people up to get it?
Yeah, because it's one of those things where it's been, like you said, so much in the news. And this is like the new pivot point for Apple and some of the things that they plan on doing as far as product is concerned. And, you know, prior, this would have been a full-blown announcement, inviting everybody out to Apple Park. I mean, a big to-do. And now it's kind of going out, or, well, coming out with kind of a whimper. Like, there's no bang, there's no gusto, there's no buildup, because it's been talked about and rumored about for so long. It's lost some of its kind of like luster and flavor. That's why I'm now kind of like, yeah, I'll probably get it. I don't know. I got some other stuff going on. I don't know. It kind of came out with a thud to me.
So here's my theory. Here's what I'm thinking on this. And y'all can tell me, you know, what you think, and, you know, if I'm wrong. But I wonder if the way Apple is doing this is intentional because number one, they want to control how many of these things are going to be out there. So they really are expecting that it's $3,500. It's only going to be the enthusiasts who are really, really into this stuff. And then also the developers who want to see what can we create now that this exists are going to be the first folks who are going to go and get this. And they don't need another event. They simply just needed to know what was coming out and what the date is. I would be willing to bet, however, because we've already heard rumors that there's going to be another version of it that's going to cost significantly less. So I wonder if when that version comes out, is that when they will actually go and do the whole event and it'll be where you just have orders of magnitude of people who are going to get it instead of, because it won't be a $3,500 device. It might be like a $1,999 device, maybe a $1,499 device or something like that.
We shall see. Saray made a good point. Since Apple has never, to my knowledge, ever attended CES or ever had any sort of booth or presentation, they kind of kept this Vision Pro announcement in the chamber and let it off around the same time as CES to make sure that people are paying attention to Apple while CES is going on. Because again, like I mentioned, Apple's never been at CES. I can't remember the story behind that. I'm pretty sure there's a story behind that, but I just can't remember what it is. But maybe they're like, probably some petty, knowing Apple. And it's around time Steve Jobs was around. Yeah. So Apple definitely something petty.
Apple's not trying to share the spotlight with 5,000 other exhibitors. They want to, you know, if they're going to do, if they're going to spend the kind of money that Apple would spend on an event like this, let's just do our own event. Y'all can come to us instead of us having to go to you. I do believe that they're going to have a presence at WWDC, which they usually, you know, do. So we'll see.
That's their event.
Yeah.
So WWDC. Well, it's Apple's event. Yeah.
That makes sense. I was just about to say that as I thought about it, but yeah, that's, you know, the next thing for them. So clearly they're going to have a lot to say about it then. But I'm just really wondering because I kind of did say, man, they're really not making a lot of fanfare about this. They're going to steal some news cycles by announcing it the day before CES technically starts. But people are doing what people are doing. We're talking about it right now. Why? Because they told us, told us a date, told us when you can pre-order it. And we know that there will be masses of people who are going to go out and do that.
Yeah. I wonder if there's a limited amount that they're willing to sell.
That's a good question. I don't know. Maybe 500,000. I don't know.
I wouldn't be shocked because I think that Apple would much rather have too many and have people want it than to have too many and they got them sitting on the shelves. So I think that they are designed that there's going to be more people who want them than they actually create this first run. And as I said earlier, they'll go ahead and put all the buzz in when they come out with a version 2 or they come out with a second edition that maybe costs a little bit less and they can get that in there, for the regulars, because $3,500 for, you know, for this device, that is a very high end gaming PC. I mean, very high end gaming PC.
And that's not including tax. That's not including the $149 if you want to get the prescription lenses on the inside. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't have, what is it? I have near field. Is that what it's called?
Nearsighted.
I'm nearsighted, meaning as things get far and far away, they get a little blurrier. I don't know if I'll need it for this because it's right in your front of your face. I really don't use my glasses outside of anything when I'm like outside of like watching TV or something like that, or, you know, doing something in front of a computer. I wonder if the prescription thing will be that much of a difference when the thing is literally right on top of your face.
And I'm interested to know, like, what type. I know that, you know, some developers got access to the headset prior so they could start building out things. I'm interested also to know what type of capability is going to come ready for this thing out of the box. So say you buy this $3,500 headset, are you going to be able to do stuff with it? Are you going to be able to do enough stuff with it on the onset to justify the $3,500 price tag?
Well, according to the Apple press release, I'm looking at Apple's newsroom. They said 1 million apps available in the App Store. Mm-hmm. Let me read this. Hold on, let me find the actual quote. Hold on, give me a second. It says ready to go. This is the gaming part. Players can access games on the App Store, including more than 250 titles on Apple Arcade, 2K, Sonic, and some other things. I thought I saw somewhere where it said a million apps available. I'm pretty sure that's not all for the Vision Pro, but maybe. Oh, here we go. An all new App Store provides users with access to more than 1 million compatible apps across iOS and iPadOS, as well as new experiences that take advantage of the unique capabilities of Vision Pro. That's all they say.
So is it a separate App Store for Vision Pro, or is it a combination?
I think
you just
it's
go
a combination.
To App Store and get everything. Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Well, we will see. And you know you're going to have to come back on, Nikki, if you do get one of these. I'll, in fact, not just come back on, but I want you to be wearing it as you do the show. When you come back on, so you can tell folks what the experience is like.
Right.
If it were less expensive, if it was $1,200, I might consider it. Me and my wife are taking a big trip in March overseas, and this would be a perfect product to be sitting on an airplane for an extended period of time, to where when I'm on a plane and I have my iPad, I've got the 12-inch iPad Pro. And, you know, sometimes I'd be like, well, if you nosy enough to look over my shoulder to watch what I'm watching, then that's your business. But at the same time, I'm kind of like, mind your business. And I want something a little bit more private. So the Vision Pro goggles, if anything, just to catch up on movies and anime, if it was $1,200, maybe, but almost $4,000 after taxes, that's a lot. That's a lot. Right now it is.
We shall soon see.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
So y'all, this story here that we're going to talk about, the Black tech talent gap, is widening. And you know, this is the kind of story that we talk about regularly on the Tech Yacht, but what caught my eye on this one, and I'm just going to read a little bit here. The Black tech talent gap is widening, and it could cost Black households $350 billion in lost wages by 2030. That's what actually made it stand out to me. It's like, okay, I already know that we lag, behind our counterparts when it comes to just how many of us are in technology and technology related roles, but how much it actually is going to cost us, because the technology gap is actually widening. So technology jobs in data science, engineering, cybersecurity, and software development are expected to grow by 14%, by 2032, but it's only expected to grow 8%. In our community over that same period. So it's actually widening. It's getting worse. So I just wanted to kind of open it up for, you know, discussion with y'all on, you know, what do you think is going on? Why are there fewer people, as it would seem, going into tech today as there were 3 years ago, 5 years ago? Why is it actually getting worse? I just wanted to kind of tap your opinions and your ideas on what you think is actually going on.
I don't know. Speculation would be the push, I'd say maybe 5-10 years, maybe not 10 years ago, maybe 5 years ago, the push for development, the push for going into coding just for the sake of going into coding was heavy about 5 years ago. I don't know why, but I'm thinking like around the pandemic, things kind of leveled off as people was like, well, learning how to code is cool, but I need to get some money right now because things is looking shaky because of this whole pandemic. So maybe I don't see the same sort of push for coding, all those boot camps, all the, you know, learn to code in 3 months, you know, whatever case. I don't see that same push. Also, maybe the proliferation of people making money online via influencers kind of has grown. It used to be bloggers, but then that kind of went away. And now content creators, if you're making videos, if you're making skits, if you're doing that sort of thing on TikTok, TikTok is new, you know, in the past three, four years. So a lot of people starting to take to that as, okay, that's my ticket to, you know, betterment as far as financial is concerned. You know, we've heard DEI, that whole thing, that big push for people to get into that. But that was, everybody kind of knew that was kind of going to be temporary anyway. So I'm not sure as to why it's widening it, but I can definitely say the emphasis on getting into tech, i.e. development, don't seem like it's the same, you know, just as 5 years ago.
So I think I think it's a couple of things. So like you mentioned, the big push for people to get into software development, whether it be through traditional means by getting a CS degree from a university, right, whether it be a boot camp, whether it be self-taught. Software development is hard. And breaking into tech from a non-tech industry is hard as well. And it's one of those things where you don't really know what the expectation is. And I think a lot of people got into those boot camps because it was all, you can make six figures in 3 months after going to this boot camp. But a lot of people were going through the boot camps, finishing them. And I don't think, and it's not just boot camps, it's, you know, undergrad, self-taught as well. They're going through these programs and they aren't really getting the solid footing that they need. And then additionally, there are some snobs in the tech space that they won't hire you if you come through a boot camp. You need to have a 4-year degree. You need to have a CS degree. Or even if they let you in, it's kind of looked down upon, which is completely ridiculous. But, you know, at the same time, you go into these interviews, which is the next part of it, is I've seen the conversation about when a minority, whether it be a woman, but typically a Black person, the interviewer is harder on a Black person. And interviewers have said this. They are harder on people of color, Black people, Hispanic, Indigenous, Asian, because it's one of those things where you really need to prove to me that you can do this. And it can be discouraging. And when you're going to apply for these positions, people are applying, you know, 400 or 500, you know, applications, maybe getting 1 or 2 interviews and, you know, not getting offers. Or in a lot of these companies, there are so many rounds to interview. You have the, you know, the first one, the recruiter reaches out where you get the background, then you do a screen, then you do a round one, then you do a round two with a, with your potential manager. Then you do a round three with, a panel of people where they do whiteboarding, where you actually do live coding. Then you get to another round where it's like, where you do the personality part of it? Are you a culture fit? And then, even after that, after going through, say, 5 rounds of interviewing, sometimes, a lot of times people are getting ghosted. They don't hear anything back, or they take all this time and they don't get hired. And this is a lot of effort. Yeah. It's very discouraging. I know I was interviewing with Google at one point, a couple different times, and I ended up canceling the process because I was like, this is too much. On the initial recruiter, it was like, so let's plan for you to actually start the actual, you know, coding part of it. We'll give you 3 to 6 months to prepare just to go in to the interview, just to go into the first round of the interview. I interviewed with Amazon. I made it to like the third round and I didn't get an offer. So it's one of those things where it's very disheartening. It's very discouraging. And when you have people who are making it even more difficult for you, it's one of those things where it's you, a lot of people just kind of give up on it because it's like, you know what? Let me go and try and find something else because obviously I'm not cut out for this when likely most people are. And a lot of these coding exams or, coding challenges, some are take home, some you do live coding. Imagine, you know, you're typing. You know how it is when you're typing an email and someone's kind of like over your shoulder or someone's watching you during a presentation and you're trying to do something, you just bungle it all up. But you have someone sitting there just watching you. They give you a problem. Mm-hmm. Do A, B, C, and D. And you have to sit there. You can't use, and a lot of times you can't use any external sources. You can only use what's in your brain, which is not how it works in the real world. Mm-hmm. You Google more than anything when you're doing this. You can't use any outside type of help. And it's, you know, sometimes it's syntax. You've forgotten because you got this person watching you. Do I use a comma? Do I use a semicolon? You know, those types of things. And you have 30 minutes to do some of these where the 30 minutes includes them giving you a problem, you asking questions on clarifying what exactly they want you to do. Then you have to code the solution and your solution has to work. And then if you're really being really jazzy, they want you to write unit tests to test what you've done.
Oh my goodness.
And all this is done in 30 minutes with someone watching you when you're already nervous anyway about being on a job interview. So it's just one of those things where getting in is really hard. It's a lot.
Just going through the process.
Yeah. And it's a lot easier when you know somebody already working there that can kind of, you know, skip you ahead of some things, but it's a very cumbersome process. And again, there are people who have biases, whether it be unconscious or not, they want to make sure, quote unquote, that you're actually good enough to work here. And these coding challenges are just made up things that don't even really apply to the work that you'd be doing. It's really, really asinine. And so that's one of the reasons why people choose not to, or they try and go into a different part of tech. So when people think tech, they just really think software development, engineering, but you have so many non-development
type roles. Project management.
Right. That people, I think one of the other things is in that gap, they don't really emphasize the non-development type of roles. And people think in order to get into tech, I have to write code. Mm-hmm. That is completely not the case. There are so many other things you can do, in tech, but most people just hear about the coding part and it gets very intimidating.
So I actually, met, a young lady, over the holidays. And, you know, I'm going to put her age out there, but she was a teacher for 7 years. You know, she graduated out of college, went into teaching, taught for 7 years. And then, got married, got pregnant, was actually pregnant with twins. So she was having somewhat of a distressed pregnancy. So she basically was not able to finish, like the second semester because she was kind of like on bed rest. She just couldn't be standing up, couldn't do the teaching. So she basically, went back in, into the house and started, doing things in the house. And she said, you know what? I don't even know if I really want to be a teacher anymore. Let me go take one of these boot camps. So she actually had the dream of, oh, I'm just going to take one of these boot camps because now I got like this, all this time I can go ahead and go through it. And, kind of did the self-study, got to the end of it. By the time the middle of the summer got around, she thought she was just going to get a job just like that. And she's like, and that's what they sell. That it happens for some people that way, but it doesn't happen for most that way. And she said, so what she ended up having to do was, she's like, okay, well, wait a minute. It's time for me to go back into the classroom. Am I going to do that? Or am I going to really go chase this dream of being a development? Now, for her, she's a full stack developer. That's what she wanted to do. Mm-hmm. So she's like, okay, well, I want to go back into the classroom. because I need these paychecks to come in. You know, my husband and I, we just had two kids and we, you know, wasn't planning on either one of them. And, so I'm going to go do that, make sure the benefits and everything is good. But she started doing volunteer projects where she was, you know, going out and, hey, I just want to get the experience. I will work and do this, you know, for free. And what it ended up happening, she ended up getting a lot of work with like nonprofits because they don't have the money to pay people. So if you've actually got somebody who has a skill set that's willing to donate their time to a project that you have, you know, in her case, hey, we will give you all kind of accolades and, you know, resume boosters and this and that and the other. And you can, you know, put your stuff on GitHub and you can show your work. So that's what it took for her. It took her, like I said, her second semester and into the summer of doing the boot camp. But then it took her another year of just doing side hustle projects, in many cases for free, for a lot of nonprofits. But once she had a year of projects and she was able to go and show her GitHub, she had a portfolio, then the job offers started pouring in, because she said what it did for her was that when they see that, oh, you did this, oh, you worked on this project, oh, you worked on this website, oh, you did these things, it no longer became a, well, you need to go and, you know, and spend 6 months trying to show us that you know how to code. We actually can see that you know it because you've actually showed us some work that has your name on it. So that was just, you know, one of the stories. Like, so we probably talked for a good 45 minutes about her journey, and I'm trying to get her to jump on a podcast because she speaks very well, but she's like, I don't know if I want to do all that. So I'm not going to pressure her, but I am going to pressure her, see if I can't get her to come on. But that was something that, it made a difference for her, was actually going out and getting the experience. And she said, it's like, you know, point blank, it's like, they weren't willing to pay, but they were willing to accept a donation of my time to work on this project. And it wasn't like, you know, light work. She's like, no, I'm spending like 20 hours a week working on stuff that I don't have any income to show for. But she says after a year of doing that, where she was looking, you know, I was just looking to get jobs that was going to replace my teaching salary when I first went into this. But after a year, she was like, I'm making like twice what I was making as a teacher after a year of experience working for these nonprofits. So that might be something that we need to put out into the ether more. It's not just go to the boot camp. Well, go to the boot camp and get actual experience doing the thing if you can find it.
If you've got time and if you've got the ability to do it. The problem with the Black tech gap, for example, and all the things like Nika just mentioned, right? She had to go through interview after interview after interview after interview. They mentioned something about 6 months to go prepare or whatever. Black people ain't got time to wait for 6 months to get a job. I need a job in 2 weeks. What can I do to get a job in 2 weeks? Give me an interview, maybe give me two interviews. But at the end of that 2 or 3 weeks, I need to know something, or else I'm gonna have to do something else, you know, versus some other people. They can go live with their parents. They can go crash with a brother or a sister. They can go, you know, they have all these different options that can, they can go back to school, you know, versus, you know, we, you know, a lot of Black folks are already limited in the amount of resources they have off the jump, because the Black wealth gap is, you know, the way it says is Black people as a whole only have like $20,000 as far as wealth is concerned. You know, we may be taking care of, like you mentioned, taking care of our kids, also taking care of our parents. We need that money, Jack. And yes, you know, somebody floats the idea that, yeah, you can make $100,000, $200,000, you know, after you get done with the boot camp and after you prove yourself. But that's like 2 years on top of, like, you just mentioned, Rob, taking jobs for free, a free job. No.
So here's,
and like Saray mentioned, gatekeeping, that's a huge thing.
That is huge
as well. And, you know, that kind of leads into the point where, you know, interviewers are harder on certain demographics of people. So, and then even, you know, getting to that point is one of those things where it's, I don't want to say it's not made easy. And again, as Black folks, we know that it's never, you know, twice as good to get half as far. You know, just a level playing field. Apply all of the things to everybody across the board. If you're going to be super tough on a certain demographic of people, be super tough against everybody. Or if you just kind of float people through, oh, let me help you out, let me help you through it, and do that with everybody. And we know that that's not the case and that's not how it works. Mm-hmm. And those are just things that are just additional blocks in the way of getting to where you want to go, which is getting, you know, breaking into tech. So.
Yeah, I have another, and this is a really close friend of mine. She is a school teacher at a private school here in the Columbus area. And it's a really nice, you know, private school here. And you just hear the things that they do. They actually have curriculum for computer science and stuff like that. So it's not just learning to read and write and do math and, you know, so on and so forth. They literally have coding classes that they're offering to fifth graders, sixth graders, seventh graders. And then they can take these, you know, actual classes that where you get accreditation as early as, you know, seventh and eighth grade. And then like, if you do it in high school, they have a curriculum for it for high school students. So you literally have high school students who are graduating high school, and they may have 1 or 2 years towards a degree in computer science, mm-hmm. with the stuff that they were doing in high school, going back to, as I said, fourth, fifth grade when they started picking the stuff up. And then you go to next door to the Columbus City School, and it is, do they actually have enough Chromebooks for all the students to use so that they can do their work? Let alone, do you actually have computer courses that you're offering to those students? Do you actually have computers that you could offer to the students so they can do all of the work that you actually are going to test them on before they get moved on to the next grade? Yeah. So that is a big part of it too. And I didn't want to focus just on the, you know, on the boot camp part of it, because the other part of this is just, you know, just STEM in general. Are we not pushing our kids enough into, you know, into these STEM categories? And, you know, we talk about this all the time. You don't always have to be a programmer. You don't have to be a product manager. You could be a, you know, you could learn how to weld.
You could be a BA. You could be a QA. You could be, you know, an architect. There are
I'm even going with skilled trades, learn how to do HVAC, learn how to, you know, be a plumber, those type of things as well. But
that ain't sexy, Rob.
They get paid though.
Electricians
get paid. Yeah. Plumbers, they get paid. It's not sexy. It's like you work with your hands.
And that's the whole reason why they push coding, because coding is sexy. Yeah. Get behind a computer, all the movies. You see all the movies, somebody hacking. Oh, let me hack into I got my back door. Oh, my triple back door. And that's sexy. And
all of it is lies.
And all of it is not reality. So
as a person who, I've worked in software development pretty much my whole adult career, as someone who has 3 STEM degrees, you spend a lot of time on Google. You spend mm-hmm. a lot of time pair programming. I can't figure out how to do something, but my friend over here might. Let's work together and figure this out. And I think what, I guess this may come under, you know, STEM education, is they aren't really focusing on the collaborative effort that it takes to do this work. They make it seem so singularly, I'm in my one little cube, just taping away. And that's not really the case. And I think a lot of kids, particularly minority kids, they're only getting the information as it relates to one specific aspect. And that is, I think, a deterrent for them wanting to go into the field, because they only have a narrow view of what to expect. That's why anytime I can speak or volunteer or, you know, go to like Girls Who Code or Black Girls Code, anytime I can go and speak to those things, I try to, because kids don't, if you don't see it, you don't know what it is. Mm-hmm. And they have in their mind what it is, what the expectation is. And it's many times it's incorrect. They don't get the full focus of it. So I think education, as with all things, is key, but making sure that if we want to close this gap, we have to make sure that kids really know what to expect, what's going on, how to prepare, because otherwise you'll just think, you know, like Terrence said, you're just sitting in a room, just, you know, on TV. You got all the screens, you got all the lights flashing, you're just typing furiously. No, you may type a couple lines and then, you know, like you know what? This isn't working. Let me try something else. You delete the whole thing and just start from scratch, because it's better to just wipe it and start over than to tinker with what you've done because it's a hot mess. So it's those things that we don't really stress, I think, or make, you know, kids aware, or even adults who want to pivot into tech know that what you see on TV, listening to a certain demographic or population of what goes into it, is giving you a false sense of what it actually takes.
Good conversation. I will just add this. If you are following someone on social media who's talking about all the accolades and everything that they've done from the boot camp that they're talking about, but they make more money promoting the boot camp that they're trying to get you to go to than actually doing the job, you might want to just rock back. I'm not saying that the information they're giving you is incorrect, but you might want to understand what the motivation for the information that's being given is. That is something that I think a lot of people get hemmed up on. You see you could do these boot camps, this and that and the other, and I'm making bank. And it's like, yeah, the bank you're making is off of selling the boot camp, not actually off of doing the coding, off of being a product manager, off of doing QA. So you got to do your research. So y'all, this last thing we want to talk about, I just want to ask you this. Do you remember back in the wake of George Floyd, the George Floyd murder, you had all kinds of tech companies, including Google and Meta, setting up new programs aimed at supporting Black employees. Google's Sundar Pichai actually said he had a goal to build sustainable equity for Google's Black Plus community, and externally to make products and programs helpful in the moments that matter most Black users. Tech companies pledge to invest millions of dollars to improve diversity in their ranks and support external groups doing work on diversity, equity, and inclusion. And it would appear that all that smoke lasted for about 3 years. So I kind of wanted to get your take on this, because I remember, Terrence, when we started talking about this stuff, around the time when we first started doing the show. And, you know, you started seeing all of these DEI programs that were coming out and all these things that companies want to do, even if it wasn't under the name of DEI, but they were going to do to try to, make sure that we are being inclusive of our Black, specifically, workers and, our customers and this and that and the other. And you kind of took the stance of, that sounds real good. Let's see how long you have to go until you don't have to do those things that you said, when you can get away with not doing it. And that's when the program ends. And it's looking like it took about 3 years.
Yep, so yep. All of the vocal commitments, all of the pledges, all of the checks.
Black squares.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. All of that. I won't say it was just that, but diversity, equity, inclusion. It's harder than vocal commitments. It's harder than pledges. It's harder than just writing checks. And when they found out that it's going to be a little bit harder, once they found out it's going to take longer, when they found out there are some people who are going to guffaw at the idea as some of these companies doing something specifically for this group that they're trying to attract into their companies, you add all that stuff up, the companies was kind of like, yeah, no. Because again, you just can't hire a bunch of Black people, or you just can't give millions of dollars to HBCUs, or just tell your employees, hey, stop that, cut that out, and expect the problem to be resolved. Once they found out or came to the realization that this is going to be hard and it's going to take years on top of years on top of years. This ain't going to be a 2-year thing. This ain't going to be once we hire 12% of people, that matches the population of the United States. There's roughly 12-13% of the population that's Black. Well, let's just get our numbers up to 10-12%, and then problem solved. It is not going to be that easy. And it's just like, yeah, we ain't got time for all that.
And DEI has now been, similar to the word woke, has now been commandeered by a different segment of population, where they're basically saying that woke and DEI is basically reverse racism. Mm-hmm. Even after they got affirmative action thrown out of college admissions, it's still somehow Black people's problem that, people aren't getting into college or aren't getting hired. And, no matter how much money you have, no matter how much you throw at it, disengaging, dismantling systematic racism is really, really hard because it's been centuries, centuries in the making. So just saying, oh, yes, we are going to do better. Oh, yes, we're going to fix this, and not realizing the depth and the issues that come along with this and how ingrained it is into every aspect of our society. They realize, like Terrence said, how much work had to go into it. And they was like, nah, I'm out. Especially now when they don't have to.
Yeah, it's culture change that has to happen. And it's you can't change culture in 2.5, 3 years. It just can't happen that quickly.
Yeah. And now that it's been 3 years since the murder of George Floyd, everybody made themselves feel better by saying, yes, we're going to invest in this. We have hired all of these DEI folks. We have built from the ground up these DEI organizations. We've hired all these people. We have a whole new C-suite title for DEI. And when they got in to do the work, they realized again how hard it is and how hard it is to dismantle this. And with the tide turning in our political atmosphere, they don't have to anymore. Right. Because now it's reverse racism. Just because one group of people says it is. And so now they're like, ooh, glad I got my hands off that. They said it's reverse racism, so we don't have to do it.
Exactly.
And it's just an easy out for them at this point to say, well, we can't really do it now because it's not really fair to some other people. And this was just their easy way out.
I want to just throw a couple stats out here. By mid-2023, DEI-related job postings had declined 44% from the same time a year prior. In November of 2023, it dropped 23% year over year. That is a sharp contrast with the period from 20 to 2021 when those postings expanded by nearly 30%. So it's like, Dave's like, yeah, we done. We move on. Nothing to see here is literally what these companies are saying. And the millions of dollars that they pledged to, you know, to, we're going to go reallocate that and do other stuff. And Nika, you're right. I think a big part of it is that you have billionaires right now who are literally saying that DEI is reverse racism. You know, that is, you know, that you should be able to say those words without losing your job. Literally, you have people who have billions of dollars that are saying that. And they're on campaigns to go out and make sure that these things don't exist in their companies, you know, any longer. So, you know, so Terrence, 3 years is what it took. Was that your over or your under?
That was about right. It was about on track. You know, it was going to take a couple of years, for them to realize it's going to be a little bit harder. And we just wanted to be on the right side of history at the time. You know, when the whole wake of George Floyd, you know, companies like, well, we want to make sure we're on the right side of history in this.
We're in the history books of saying, yes, we agree. This is right. Bad.
Now time has passed. You know, it's like, all right, well, back to your regularly scheduled program.
Yeah.
So, your boy Elon Musk had something to say about this, you know, a few big, yeah, exactly. But, you know, he was the one that was most vocal. And I think, Nick, you said it. Once he said it, other folks kind of rocked back. Thank you, Elon, for saying this, because now we can lean into what we've been thinking all along. And we always go back to on this show, why are things like DEI, why is diversity, equity, and inclusion an important thing from a business standpoint? You know, what does the company benefit from if you do these things? Well, every study, well, I don't want to say every study because there's probably some that can show the negative. Many studies, probably most studies have shown that when you actually are thinking about the communities that your products touch, when you're thinking about the communities that work on creating the products that your company offers, you tend to make not just a little bit more money, but it's significant. It is, you make significantly more as a company, as a global organization, when you think about how the products that you create affect the people that you're creating them for. Because I would tell you right now, if like, you know, African Americans in the country are about in between, was it 13.5% of the population? Somewhere in that range. Any company that just would lose 13% of their money coming in, that CEO, that CFO, they would lose their jobs if they lost that kind of revenue coming in, you know, at a company. But that's not what they're looking at. They're not looking at, well, we're not losing that because we do have African Americans who are buying our products. It's like, yeah, we're buying in, you know, in Barron and Drennan a lot of times because it's like, this is the only thing that is out there for us to go out and get. But what they're failing to understand is that, well, if you were to think about these things, you would actually make more. And there's empirical evidence that shows this. But the other side of this is that, well, wait a minute. If you do something that helps this group specifically because of the inequity that has existed in the system, well, that's not helping me. And that may actually make it harder on me. So you get these folks that are making these statements. Well, wait, I'm being discriminated against. It's like, you know, you're not specifically helping me. You're helping this other person. That's not helping me. That's discrimination. When you actually dig into it, and I'm not an expert on it. So, you know, I know that there are people who can talk about it, way more eloquently than I can, but that is a big part of what goes on right now. You have a lot of folks who think that we're going to try to rectify these patterns of systemic racism. And in doing so, I no longer get the hookup. Therefore, I'm being discriminated against. And that's a hard thing to fight. Nikki, you said it. This is not something you can do in 1 year, 2 years, 3 years. It literally takes, you know, in some cases it might take a generation to actually make these changes of you doing the hard work. And, you know, we think back to the, you know, we're all too young to remember the civil rights era, but our parents definitely and our grandparents definitely lived through it. And for them, they had to, you know, we're not going to ride these buses. For months, we're going to figure out how to get to work. We're not going to buy these products. We're going to have to literally make our own soap at the house because we're just not going to do this anymore because, because of how we're being treated by this organization or this company that creates this product for us. Those type of things are hard and they take a lot of time in order for companies.
Blatant. Yeah. It's not that blatant. Back then it was. Black people, you cannot do this.
Yeah.
That's not the case anymore. They don't say black people, you can't do development at Google or Meta or wherever the case may be. It's subtle. It's underlying. It's not the top issue, which is why the people who are most affected, African-Americans, black people, brown people, whatever the case may be, we're not as galvanized because it's not in our face. Mm-hmm. Now, if Sundar Pichai and Elon, well, let's not talk about Elon Musk because he pretty much said it. But right. Some of these other people was like, we really ain't feeling black people at Google. Then we would galvanize and say, well, I just ain't buying Google services no more. Get this phone back, whatever the case may be. That's not the case anymore. And to add on top of that, the point you made, Rob, as it relates to focuses on some of these issues that we experience will make them more money. It ain't going to make them no more money in 3 months. It ain't going to make them more money in 6 months. It ain't going to make them more money in a year, which is when they need to report earnings and when they need to send PR and have earnings calls with their shareholders. The shareholders is like, where's the money in 3 months? Where is it in 6 months? Where is it in 9 months? Problems like we're discussing right now, like you mentioned, Rob, it's going to take a generation. Mm-hmm. Companies ain't willing to wait a generation for the time and the money that they invested in making it a world a better place. For that finally to pay off to where now they've got 12%, 13% of black people in the workforce. You know, they're doing all these things and that brings in more money on the consumer side. They ain't waiting that long. Three years.
Nice. And you also have to think of the cross section between race and class, because there are a lot of black people who are very successful. There are a lot of black people who make a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times that's thrown out as well. It's like, well, these black people over here are successful. Why can't you be like these black people? Mm-hmm. It's not racism because these people have done it.
Right.
Right. And so it makes
despite racism, they just don't see it that way. Yeah.
Right. And it makes it seem as if the people who aren't successful is because they aren't trying hard enough, because you have this standard over here of this class of black people who have quote unquote made it or have, bootstraps and all that crap.
No, there are people who truly believe that America is a meritocracy, that you get everything based off of what you deserve. They truly believe that. And
you're not killing that in 3 years.
No.
So these companies are like, nah, we straight.
Not at all. Not at all.
Like, I was just reading something. The former CEO of Lululemon, I think he's a founder of it, Chip Wilson.
Yeah.
It made some crazy comments about, well, in fact, what did he say here? He's facing backlash over comments. It's like, not everybody should is cut off for our retro brand. So it has to be something that blatant, because now it's probably going to happen, because they have Lululemon shareholders that are like, he said, what can we do? You can't do anything. He's no longer part of the company. He's still the largest shareholder. So I think he owns, is it like 8% of the company or something like that? So he's definitely a billionaire off of that, but he can say what he wants to say. But the problem that Lululemon is now facing is that, oh, well, what happens to us if everybody black and brown stops buying Lululemon because they think that this dude is just a flat out racist? He told us it's not made for you. Yeah, it's like, this is not for you. We don't, I really don't want you wearing my stuff. And then they were to stop. That is what, the company is going to change, but only until you get past this crisis that they're having right now. And then, you may go back to, business as usual. So it's something that, that we need to keep an eye on. We need to work and get better at this, but making something. And, I try to explain this whenever I am able to have a conversation with someone who may have a difference of opinion, but there can be conversation to be had. And it's like, making something fairer for someone is not discriminating against you. You have these, because a lot of times folks don't want to believe anything you have to say about white privilege. It's like, that is such a trigger word for so many folks. But it's like, if I am just leveling the playing field, that is not discriminating against you. It is trying to remove the discrimination against them. But the way that the human mind works is that, well, wait, I'm not getting hooked up anymore. That's a problem for me. I don't want this. So. Yeah.
Absolutely. And the thing is, that fact that people still believe they're like you said, there are people who are not black who think that all black people go to college for free wherever they go just because they're black. It's people who really still think that. Now that just, they've been told these stories by their grandparents or parents or, just through community, that because you're black, you automatically get free everything, that you get into school or get into college just because you're black. And it's just like the untangling, the unraveling of these mindsets is, I don't know, it's a maze that you can never unravel. And I don't know what the answer to that is.
Yeah, that
and to make it matters worse, y'all mentioned Lululemon and this dude Chip Wilson. He made those comments, and I'm just gonna read this and I'm done. Wilson's remarks do not appear to have affected Lululemon's stock price, which at nearly $500 a share currently sits at an all-time high. Wilson remains the company's largest single shareholder with holdings worth more than $4 billion, according to Securities and Exchange Commission. So on top of all that, they can say whatever and nothing happens.
Their money has not changed.
Right. So all the more reason for them to be like, yeah, we're going to move on from this. Nothing to see here.
He's not involved with the company. Let's keep going and buying our $150, socks.
I do wonder, like, there's nothing from Lululemon that I'm ever going to wear, but I do wonder, as this gets out, he said, what? What did he say? Will it affect anything?
No.
It hasn't yet.
Absolutely
but will
not.
It, so
it, no. If anything, it drives more people who have those same thoughts to buy more. We've seen it with, with beer, the beer and all these things. It's like, or a person says, my thing is for only, white people. Or white men or men or whatever the case may be. And the people who agree with it, they flock to whatever that thing is. Be like, yeah, this is what I believe too. This is right. But it flocks. The people that you lose is basically negligible to the people that they gain from just the knowledge of them being whether it's racist, whether it's misogynist, whether it's whatever the ism is, the people who have that same ism, they're like, well, these are my people. I need to go buy their stuff. And the amount of people that they lose, they unfortunately, they are net positive on the return of it.
Yep. Well, y'all, I'm looking at the time. We are we're well past the top of our hour. And this was good conversations here in the show. Nika, it was absolutely a pleasure having you on the show. Guys, we haven't had a new patron in a minute. We've had some raises. Yeah, we have not had any new patrons this whole daggone year. I mean, the whole year we ain't had any.
The whole year.
But I do want to shout out some folks. Mario Wilson gave us a raise here in the new year. And I want to make sure I'm saying this name right. It's Andretta Cabario gave us a raise this year as well. So we want to thank you for increasing what you are donating to us with your membership over on Patreon. So for those who are willing to do that, once again, head over to patreon.com/thetechjohn. And there are multiple tiers over there, any one of which gets you access to our live stream and after party. And you can come hang out with us and hang out in our Discord and all those kind of good things. So Saray actually said that is one of our founding 50 members. She has been rocking with us since almost the beginning. She was like, I feel like I'm missing out when I don't listen to ads. If you would like to listen to ads and you are a patron, more power to you. We will just say you are a real one when you do that, when you have the opportunity not to. So yeah, you don't have to listen to your Patreon feed if you don't want to, but that is a benefit that you get. You don't have the ads that we have in our pre-roll, mid-roll and post-roll of the show if you choose to become a patron and actually support the show financially. So with that being said, Nika Mumford, go ahead and tell folks how they can get at you.
You can pretty much find me at Tech Savvy Diva everywhere.
And you can find me all over the internet at Brother Tech. That's BROTHATECH. And additionally, you can find me and Nika every Friday on SnobOS. Definitely go to snoboscast.com to get all of that information on when we record, when we air, and when you can be a part of our community.
And I am at Rob Dunwood on all the things. And we are also at The Tech John on all the things. So come holler at us wherever you holler. Until we meet again in a week's time.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact. You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Peace.